Welcome to Alpha Trader. We are 1 year from the March 2020 bottom. Obviously, it's been an incredible and dramatic year for the financial markets. The question, of course, though, is where do we go from here and how do we get there? Joining us to help answer those questions are Sam Stovall. He's the chief investment strategist at CFRA, and Todd Rosenbluth, head of ETF and mutual fund research at CFRA, which is an independent provider of investment research. Sam and Todd, welcome to Alpha Trader.
Happy to be here.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Hey, guys.
Great to have you guys. And truth be told, we didn't plan this to be the one-year anniversary of the bottom when we booked you guys. It's been a couple of weeks since we set this up. But happy to have you here. Want to focus more on where we're going, but just quickly to step back. And I think, you know, for all of us, it's been like, wow, has it been a year already? So much has happened in the past year. And Sam, I'll start with you. What stands out to you about, you know, where we were and how far we've come in the past year?
Well, I think you hit it on the right, the last part of the question, how far have we come? For me, it's just a continued reminder about how quickly the market can get back to break even, as well as how quickly it can fall when it gets scared. We went through a 34% price decline in the S&P 500 last year that took only 33 calendar days. That was the fastest on record. Yet we then got back to break even on August 18th, which was less than 5 months, the third fastest recovery than in history. Since then, meaning since March 23rd of 2020, all sizes, styles, and sectors within the S&P 1500 that consists of the large, mid, and small cap universes, as well as 100% of all of the 140 sub-industries were in positive territory, with copper up 550%, home furnishing retail up 450%, and leisure facilities up 340%. So even the worst performing groups were up by double digits. So it's just a reminder that if you don't have a perfect market timing tool, you are better off buying than you are bailing.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing when you go through those industry groups and how well they've done, because I think until the last few months, the story for a lot of people has been like, well, you know, you want to be in the big and the mega cap tech stocks, but certainly they've struggled a bit as yields have risen the last few months, but that's not even the story for the past year. So Todd, from an ETF perspective, you know, what should I have done a year ago? What would have been the best play, you know, hindsight being 2020, of course?
Well, the growth strategies performed the best. And we saw, you know, technology, you know, the more thematic oriented ETFs that benefited from a working from home and staying at home theme. As you know, these were helped in part because of low interest rates as well. I want to backtrack a bit if I can, and just bigger picture, ETFs were the place that investors often rotated to. In the past year, there's been $690 billion, with a B, billion dollars of money flowing in to ETFs across various ranges of styles. So the fixed income products were very popular last year as a hunkered down place to invest and hide out in until the economy showed signs of recovery. Then the equity market showed equity ETFs were very popular as we hit the fourth quarter of the year. And then to start the year, of 2021, we've seen more an international ETFs and emerging market ETFs be very popular. So investors have been rotating into ETFs in part from either individual stocks or more so for mutual funds. And as we like to say, there's an ETF or three or four for every investment theme and style. So investors had lots of choices to consider.
Well, that's a great segue, I think, to where things are going. Talking about inflows and fund flows, you know, there's already a lot of chatter and some statistics about money from the stimulus, the most recent stimulus approval, going into the stock market. Are you guys seeing that? And Sam, I guess the question for you then is, how much, if at all, is that playing into your forecast for where we're going from here? And if I'm correct, your 12-month target for the S&P is 4265, which is around the 9% gain from where we started this week.
That's right. Well, I think that it's really the money flows that continue to help support and propel stock prices. We went through a 9.6% pullback that concluded on September 23rd of 2020. So that was the last time that we had a meaningful price decline, in my opinion. But since then, we've had very strong performances, really led by those sectors that tend to be the better performers in a steepening yield curve environment, in particular, energy, financials, industrials, and materials. And I think as a result of that, you know, with the market up more than 20% since that late September sell-off, investors are saying, you know what, there really is still no place to go. And I've also been experiencing a bit of amateur enthusiasm where friends, neighbors, people who have never invested before are now calling me up to say, I want to get a part of the action. Where should I buy? Should I buy Bitcoin? Should I buy GameStop? And then other questions from the media saying, with people having their 1,400 stimulus check in hand, where should they invest that? And I guess my feeling is probably your rent and food. And if you don't need to, well, then you shouldn't have gotten it. But really, I think that there is still an awful lot of money on the sidelines, and momentum will probably be one of the factors that continues to drive share prices.
Just to piggyback on what Sam was saying, the flows really back that up. The energy sector through XLE and the financial services sector through XLF have been two of the more popular ETFs this year. And as listeners probably appreciate, you get the benefits of diversification. So instead of just owning Exxon and Chevron, you get all of the companies within the S&P 500 energy sector, the drillers, the oil services companies, and you get to spread that risk around.
And I had a question, Doug. So we're talking about kind of how the energy sector and the financial sector have both done well in a rising yield environment, or what's expected to be a rising yield environment or a steeper yield curve environment since going on for a few months. Those moves kind of started off somewhat under the radar. Now it's fully known to the entire investing universe how that's done well. It's fully known that, or fully thought to be, that the economy is recovering, things are reopening, the vaccines are working. Is there the chance that that's kind of baked in at this point? And what are the kind of the downside risks to yields that, you know, there's something that's going to kind of throw the economy off track or throw the reopening trade off track?
Well, I think the recovery in the economy and the earnings is already part of the assumption. What Right. we don't know, however, is the magnitude. Right now, expectations are that the S&P will grow by 21% in terms of earnings in 2021. Mid caps up 40%, small caps up almost 80%, developed international up 40%, and emerging markets up 35%. However, those numbers keep growing. And I think once we start to get Q1 2021 earnings and forward guidance, again, we could see an upward tilt, an upward bias to 2021 forecasts. What is also unknown, however, is the speed and magnitude with which worries about inflation and interest rates evolve. Fed Chair Powell's comments to the media last week, on the one hand, were encouraging because he was saying that he's going to keep interest rates low on the short end because there is still concern about the health of the global economy, et cetera. But then investors started to worry, well, wait a minute, if they dig their heels in and allow inflation to run hot for longer, maybe they are going to put themselves even further behind the curve and inflation will become a big problem. And as a result, they will have to start to raise rates sooner and more aggressively than currently anticipated.
Well, I just wanted to say, I wanted to, is that your forecast, I guess, is where I wanted to go, because I think what Stephen is saying is this rising yields, has it been overdone, at least in the short term? We're talking here Monday morning, right at the open, and bond yields have fallen. Some people are attributing that to a flight to quality in treasuries because of what Turkey's done, or the prime minister of Turkey did by firing the central bank governor. Just fears of what's happening in emerging markets. Generally, money goes into treasuries, yields come down, and now the NASDAQ is up. I mean, that seems a little pat. I know it's not so simple, but on a day-to-day basis, it seems like that's the trade. What is your forecast for yields?
And let me just add one more thing to that is you know, I don't think making nearly enough headlines is the fact that, you know, Paris has returned to a lockdown, not as stringent as previously, right. But and Germany cases are on the rise, and Merkel's talking tough again. Now, is there, you know, are these variants a real thing, or is it just that Europe has botched its vaccine rollout and that's not going to happen in the U.S. or yeah, I would just add that to the list of concerns too.
Well, I think that's what's causing the increase in concern, is because nobody's sure, because there are both sides of the coin. Talking about how the U.S. is opening up, 25% of the populace has been vaccinated, expected to be 90% by the third quarter of this year. And so, you know, the optimism abounds here in the U.S., but obviously the not same cannot be said for Europe, for the Middle East, for the Far East, et cetera. And so, yeah, the globe itself will not be reopening as quickly as we might expect it to be here in the U.S. When you look to economic projections, inflation still seems to be under control. Our economics department is basically saying, yeah, we'll probably see a spike in inflation in the second quarter, up 3.5% for headline, CPI 2.4% for core, but then we'll probably be coming down to 3% and 2% respectively by the end of the year. And then the 10-year note is expected to hover around or average around 185 by the end of this year. If you look to the technicians, however, they're saying, no, we're already in a bullish uptrend for interest rates, and the expected area is between 1.67 and 1.97. And obviously, prior resistance becomes current support. So if we break above those levels, well, then we continue to see upward targets. So it is interesting that both on a fundamental and a technical basis, you can make the case for being both optimistic and less cautious.
Yeah, that's what makes a market, I guess. So I guess I would ask Todd, like, how would you recommend someone express the view and tell me whether this is the CFRA view that, you know, maybe yields are peaking here. And at least short term, you know, all this inflation concern and, you know, maybe the economy is not going to run so hot and Larry Summers is going to be wrong again. Sorry, I couldn't help that. but as seriously as an investor, if I wanted to make a bet on that, what would be a way to do it for through ETFs?
So there's two ways. I want to get Sam to confirm I'm correct on this in a second. But if you wanted to do this on a market cap weighted basis, which is, I think, the way that Sam's done it using the S&P 500, XLK is the technology sector spider ETF tracking the S&P 500, heavily weighted towards Apple and Microsoft, of course. And XLP is the consumer staples select sector spider.
Right. So, and obviously I was, you know, being a little bit tongue in cheek there in the question, but, you know, what is your baseline here in terms of, it sounds like you think rates are more likely to rise than not. And correct me if I'm wrong on there. And then if that's the case, you know, what's the right approach from a stylistic point of view?
Right. Okay. Well, I've got basically two responses for you. One is, in a sense, what is our base case for the rest of this year? And my belief is that we end up with a positive year for the S&P 500. I do think that the expanding economy naturally drives an increase in inflationary expectations and interest rates. But as has been the case over time, the market is willing to accept the bad with the good, the bad being higher interest rates, the good being an expanding economy. So I think those areas that are more value oriented, more quality oriented, and even down in the mid and small cap arena will probably end up being outperformers this year. But I don't think that volatility has been repealed. And so it depends on the kind of investor you are. I mean, we all know that emotions drive investors. And I like to say that in this day and age of instant information, I can experience both fear and greed at the exact same moment. So I wrote a book a couple of years ago, and one of the chapters in The Seven Rules of Wall Street was a rule about free lunch. How can I get something for nothing? Well, by combining two sectors that basically have opposite correlations with one another, technology and consumer staples. One has been able to equal technology's performance, and tech has been the best performing sector since 1990, but do so at about only about two-thirds of the overall volatility. And this way, by having one foot in cyclicality, one foot in defensiveness, this technique has had either feet beat the market 93% of the time since 1990. And so you've been able to be in it and win it, but be able to sleep at night as well.
All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Alpha Trader. We're back with Sam Stovall and Todd Rosenbluth of CFRA. And Sam, I wanted to pick up on something you said earlier. You used the phrase, which I really like, amateur enthusiasm, in talking about, in response to the question I asked you about people putting their stimulus checks into the market. Citigroup's Tobias Lefkovich had a note out on Monday saying that due to the current rebound rally, our primary gauge of sentiment bounced back into euphoria territory, and current readings are implying a 100% chance of market downside risk based on history, end quote. So they have their panic euphoria model. Everyone measures sentiment a different way. What is your sense of the animal spirits here right now? Are people as, you know, is greed really running the show as much as Tobias and the team at Citigroup seems to be implying, or is that overstating things in your opinion?
No, I think that it is something to be concerned about. I can't help but be reminded of the story that Joseph Kennedy, Bernard Baruch were having their shoes shined, and they realized back in 1929 it was time to get out of stocks when the person shining their shoes started giving them stock recommendations. Usually when it gets down to the lowest common denominator, you know, everybody has bought in. And if everybody has bought in, well, then who's left to buy to support or propel stocks even further? What I don't know, however, is whether the money that's on the sidelines also will be put to work before this bull market has run its course. I do know that historically, Tobias is absolutely correct, that we had 10 new all-time highs in the S&P 500 through the end of February, and only 11 other years since 1929 has that occurred. And all 11 years but one was positive for the full year, but they all experienced a meaningful decline that typically started by the end of April. So wouldn't it be interesting that the sell in May period kicks off with the beginning of a meaningful correction or a decline of 10% or more?
There's a lot of talk about euphoria and folks talking about all the money they're making. I mean, I don't know. I think there's been a pretty bodacious sell-off in a lot of these stocks over the past weeks or even months in some names. And in my amateur opinion, there's actually a little more trepidation than greed going on right now. I don't know. Just a thought.
Well, I guess, yeah, no, it's a good thought. I think that is certainly... that's what makes a market, as we said earlier. But the thing is, it's interesting, is that, yes, we did have about 11% sell-off in the NASDAQ 100. So it dipped into a very shallow correction. Yet a week ago, we had the Dow, the S&P 500, and the Russell 2000 all set additional new highs. So I don't really think that it has flowed out to the other markets out there. I think the real reason is because, as Todd had mentioned earlier, growth stocks have outperformed value stocks since the March 23rd low. But what's interesting is that as of the third quarter of last year, growth outperformed value by the highest percentage point differential in history, meaning since the middle 1970s, when S&P first created the growth and value indices, on a rolling 52-week basis, growth beat value by 35 percentage points. And, you know, like the old Milwaukee beer commercial tagline, it just doesn't get any better than this. And that's basically what happened, is that as interest rates started to increase, as the intrinsic value computations for these high growth companies started to come down because of the high interest rates in those models, investors have started to rotate from growth into value. And so I guess the real question is, will there be enough subsurface rotation to, in a sense, offset the enthusiasm in particular areas? Or is that simply the beginning of what we normally experience before everybody decides, rather than rotating, they would rather retreat?
Todd, I was just wondering if I could ask a question as a specific area of ETFs. Could you explain smart beta to me? I mean, I know what high beta is. I know what low beta is. What is smart beta?
So smart beta is a term that the industry came up with a few years back, which is another way of saying anything other than market cap weighted approaches. So the S&P 500 is a market cap weighted index with Apple and Microsoft and Amazon and others being at Facebook, among others, being heavily weighted within. If you wanted to either reduce your risk profile with either a lower volatility or even perhaps an equally weighted approach like we touched on, or increase your reward potential with a momentum strategy or to focus on value-oriented strategies, that would be known as smart beta. And so ETFs that are tied to either certain attributes such as quality, SPHQ would be an example of that, or lower volatility, an ETF like USMV would be an example of that to reduce the risk profile. Those are smart beta ETFs. The intent is to get some of the attributes that you'd find within active management, but in a more rules-based, index-based approach, and of course, pay less. If it's index-based, you're typically paying 15 basis points, 20 basis points, as opposed to an actively managed mutual fund that costs 100 basis points. And You can pay less, you have a better chance of trying to outperform.
Yeah, I'm glad we got on this topic of smart beta ETFs, because I wanted to ask you about, Todd, a note you put out earlier this month. But just to go back a step, you know, I think part of the issue is that you have to, for all everybody, each of us and listeners, define what the market is to you. JC Peretz, who's been a frequent guest on the show, you know, likes to say, like, the NASDAQ is not the market, but for a lot of people, the NASDAQ has become the market. And brothers, it's the S&P. And then that's market cap weighted, obviously. And certainly the Dow, you know, is tilted towards a huge company. So you have to set your own parameters when you talk about it. So depending on what stocks you own, there have been, as Stephen put it, bodacious sell-offs in some of those mega caps. And they've underperformed, certainly. But if you've been in energy and financials, you're thinking everything's wonderful right now, or at least, you know, in the past 6 months. So from that digression, Todd, you're in your note, again, this was from March 10th, so a couple weeks ago, you talked about how higher risk smart beta ETFs have outperformed the more defensive ones. Do you have a recommendation here for, you know, how I should position myself from a smart beta perspective? Or is it that people come to you and say, this is how I want to be positioned? How do I structure a portfolio that way?
So CFRA has a rating on individual ETFs. We do have an opinion as to whether what ETF is likely to outperform the broader market and unlikely to outperform. But I do agree with you. It does come down to, what does an investor want? Are they interested in taking on more risk in hopes of getting rewarded? We actually think that that's valuable to be able to do. We're favoring the higher growth strategies over the more defensive ones. But for example, SPLV, which was in that note that we highlighted, has significantly underperformed growth strategies or higher beta strategies or anything else within the past year. But it's doing exactly what you would want it to do. It's reducing the risk profile. It's just not going up as much. And so if the goal is to take the S&P 500, get some of the upside gains, but protect the downside, it's doing that. We just don't think that strategy is going to outperform, as we think the market's going to climb higher. And we would favor more of growth-oriented strategies or higher quality strategies. So SPHQ is a higher quality strategy. RPG is more of a growth-oriented strategy, using the S&P 500 as the starting point for potential investments.
All right. Our guests have been Sam Stovall and Todd Rosenbluth of CFRA. Sam and Todd, thanks very much for being with us today.